Arizona Cardinals fans, do you see red? Are you part of the Red Sea? Then you are listening to The Show For You, a podcast for Cardinals fans, by Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider perspectives. It's time to rise up and see red. Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome again to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. It's been a while. We haven't had a show since the NFL draft completed, and we had our post-draft show, but between graduation of my daughter and a trip that I took to out of the country in Hawaii for Seth and all sorts of stuff going on, we haven't had a chance to talk about anything since the draft, Seth. And there's a whole bunch to talk about, is there not?
There is. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happened, all the mini camps and OTAs and all that jazz has come and gone, and now it's time to kind of get back to work, and so to speak, and look at what came out of those that time for the Arizona Cardinals.
And so we'll talk about, since we're now officially everything for OTAs is done, mini camp is done, and the Cardinals have are on their summer break until training camp July 27th. So this will be, we're going to fill you in. So this is the dead period. So we're going to fill you in with some content. I imagine we'll probably have two more shows before the start of training camp. We're not going to go crazy into a show every week unless something hits. But we've got lots to talk about. In particular, the biggest story around the Cardinals right now is that of the holdout of David Johnson, who out of nowhere, it seemed, he attended all of the voluntary stuff. He was at the first mini camp for veterans. Then he was at all of OTAs until the very last couple of days where he sat out what looked like it was an injury. No, it wasn't that. He's holding out for his new contract. So we're going to talk about the holdout. We're going to talk about our biggest takeaways. Seth's got three big takeaways from OTAs and minicamp, basically the offseason work. I'll share with my three biggest offseason takeaways. We're going to talk about, in light of the David Johnson situation, we're going to go over who are the players that the Cardinals need to extend, because they did extend one, and it was not the player that you expected to get extended first, but we talk about that. And then, well, are there any other additions to the roster that we want to see? So that's what we're going to talk about in this edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, episode 193. So let's go ahead and just start it. So we're going to start off with the David Johnson holdout. Now, was it as surprising to you as it was to me to hear that he was holding out for a new contract? Considering everything we know about him as a person and him as a player, were you surprised?
I was surprised because, as you and you kind of mentioned beforehand, he was at OTAs, so it just seemed like he was going to be the good soldier and kind of work his way into camp and through whatever was going on with his contract. And then all of a sudden there was that whisper, right? The whisper of the, is it really an injury? And, you know, Kent Summers is probably one of the, you know, two best Cardinals writers in the world. I mean, no offense to you and I, but he's been doing this longer than the two of us combined. And he said, he came out with the, I'm reporting that I've been told that it's not a major injury. It's a minor injury. And that was kind of that, right? Like, everybody was like, oh, okay, we'll move on. And then what happened? I mean,
and the national scoop, Adam Schefter, once again scooping our local guys, comes out and said David Johnson is a holdout for mandatory mini cap in contract negotiations. And we're like, wait, what?
Yeah. And so that's the thing. Again, it comes back. And again, it's not a shot at Kent. Kent's a fantastic reporter, does a great job. But I mean, that's just the reality. Sometimes they are too quick to kind of just play off whatever whatever the organization is telling them, right? And it happens all the time. I mean, hey, this is what's going on, don't worry about it, type stuff. And it turns out that, no, there's a little bit more of a story to this whole thing. And you know, obviously, like you said, the national guys got it out there. This is actually a big deal. And maybe that's a strong word, because you and I have both written about it. This has a likely definitive expiration date, unless he is just very poorly represented by his agent. But, you know, it was a statement, and it was a statement of, hey, I believe I'm worth this, and I'm expecting you guys to find a way to pay me this. And so we'll see what happens. But yeah, I mean, I was surprised that it's gotten to this point, because you and I were just talking about it off the air. It seems kind of cut and dry, doesn't it? Like, he's clearly your best player. Pay your best player.
Right. And yeah, and it's just, well, here's the thing. Here's the part with me that was kind of weird. We've seen the Cardinals haven't had an actual holdout in basically this century. Almost for the century. There were two contract disputes. That was Anquan Boldin and Darnell Dockett. They still showed up to minicamp and had what I love how Summers described it when he tweeted about it, is seasonal hamstring injuries, where they didn't participate. They were there because they were supposed to be there, but they did not participate, saying that they had hammy injuries. So, and as we've looked at the last few years, the Cardinals have been getting those contract extensions done. Chandler Jones got his long-term deal done after he got the franchise tag. We've seen Patrick Peterson, and it's always near this. It's always during training camp. Patrick Peterson got extended. Larry Fitzgerald got extended. Carson Palmer got extended. Tyrann Mathieu got extended. It's something that has been a regular occurrence, that it's been happening. They've been, as Steve Keim said it, rewarding their guys, their core players, for long-term deals. So my first impression when the holdout news came out was, oh, something happened. Now, Steve Keim the Cardinals were quick, and notice that we're recording on Tuesday night, and on Wednesday of this week, on the 20th, when this episode will drop ultimately, the final episode of the Cardinals flight plan show but it was a week ago that the Cardinals that Darren Urban wrote about the interview that he had for that episode, where Keim says he can't wait to roll. So the Cardinals got their message out there. Hey, totally planning. We're optimistic. It's going to happen. We've taken care of these other guys. We're going to take care of them, which leads to something happened. Well, I wrote a couple of things that there's basically three scenarios where I see were possible reasons for why it happened. My first impression was, because the reports were there were talks that they've been in contract negotiations, and it must be one that they came, what the Cardinals came back with their initial number just wasn't anywhere near what Johnson's camp was expecting. And so they're going, okay, we're going to pump the brakes here. We're backing out. He's like, hey, we're serious about this. Another possible scenario is timing. You know, with the summer break coming up, I'm sure the front office is ready to go, and it's Keim's going to take his vacation. Michael Bidwell's going to. And so it might have been a case where we don't want to do this right now. We'll do it. We'll go ahead. Negotiations it back in at the end of July when training camp starts. There's also another one that I was, when I was on my radio spot on AM 1060 last week, the radio host Dave Bierstein suggested, well, maybe this was a ploy all along. Johnson, who was injured all last year, he came back and showed, which he probably needed to do. He went to all the voluntary stuff, and he impressed. Steve Wook was like, wow. I don't want to get too excited, but man, does David Johnson look good. He got really excited about it. And maybe the plan was all along, okay, show that he's healthy. And then, hey, we've given you a taste. Now we're backing up. Now pay us. So Which of those scenarios do you think is the most likely? My first impression was, oh, the Cardinals went to the table with the number that did not make them happy.
Yeah, and that's what I thought it was all along, is that they came up and it was just the numbers were too far apart. And when that happens, you know, kind of like you said, that makes everything really difficult, because you come in with, hey, this is what we're going to do, this is where we're at. And if you come in and we're just going to throw numbers out, just so and Jess and I don't think it's this drastic, obviously, but we're just going to throw numbers out. You know, if you come in and say, hey, you know, 2 years, $10 million, and he's sitting there going, no, I'm expecting to get 4 years, $40 million, you know, like that's all of a sudden kind of why people back away. And so if the Cardinals come with what, you know, the expected kind of market value is, 4 years, 36 to 40 million, and David Johnson and his team are sitting there going 560, I mean, that's a huge disparity. I mean, it may not sound like a lot when you're just talking about 2 million a year, but what ends up happening is that 36, or let's just call it 40 for easy math, that 40, typically you get about half guaranteed. So if one party's thinking it's going to be, you know, 4 years, 40, well, then you're probably looking at 20 to, you know, 25 guaranteed. And if the other party's sitting there going, no, 560, they're thinking 30 plus guaranteed money. And so I think more than anything, I would expect, especially for a running back, especially for a guy who has had two injuries in his last two games, kind of probably changed his thought on his, you know, playing mortality. And obviously you wrote about the fact that his wife had suggested he retire after the kind of gruesome, not serious knee injury against the LA Rams 2 years ago. And so all of that begs the question of, it probably is guaranteed money that's where they're apart on.
Now, what would you think? Now, there's a couple of things here. I want to talk about how much you think he needs to get paid. What's that contract going to look like? Because I think we're working with a couple of things. One is, well, what is he worth to the Cardinals? And two, he and Le'Veon Bell both are really trying to reset the value of running backs, and considering the type of production that they do for their offenses, between their running ability and receiving ability, I think they're trying to revolutionize this for the game. And so they're trying to reset the market there now. But before that, it's been interesting to see the takes of fans and how we should react to this holdout. I, for one, I am never, ever going to criticize a player for holding out. Because now, especially in this situation where Johnson is, it's in the final year of his contract. And I will not criticize someone for saying they signed a contract, they need to honor it. That's baloney in the NFL. That there's no such thing as honoring a contract in the NFL, because it really only goes one way. If the player, a team can just say, no, I don't. This isn't like other sports. It's different than basketball. It's different than baseball. You sign a deal, you get all that money. In the NFL, that is not the case. So yeah, I think it's a bad idea for fans to turn on a player for wanting to use the only leverage that he has, because, hey, he gets that big deal. Guess what? The Cardinals, like what happened with Tyrann Mathieu. So 2 years into his deal, what did they do? They cut him because they could. And so he didn't get. So he was due another, $25 million, and he was due another $19 million guaranteed, and the Cardinals cut bait. So we can't get upset at a player for not honoring their contract. When what do teams do on a yearly basis? They cut guys because of money. So one, I'm in Johnson's corner because when it comes to players and money, guess who I want getting the money? The players who are putting their bodies on the line should be the ones making money. There's no revenue cap for owners and for franchises, but the players have to work under a salary cap where they fit into a team. Teams can make as much money as they want. So go players, get your money. I have no problem with that.
Right, and when you look at it from that perspective, especially the running back position and the fact that, you know, Johnson, we've talked about this before, but Johnson's going to be 27 this year. So his league age, his NFL age is 27 because he turns 27 in December of 18. So his league age is 27. He's an older running back on a rookie deal. That's, you know, like I said, this is going to be his payday. This is the one big payday, unless he is just a complete freak of nature. It's highly unlikely that he's going to get another, you know, 10 plus million in guaranteed money after 30. Because here's the deal. If he's really good, he's going to see the end of that contract, right? He's going to see the year 30 and 31 of this new deal that the Cardinals are probably going to sign him to. And if he's bad, well, then what other team's going to sign him? So realistically, if they sign him to a 4 or 5 year deal, he's probably, you know, maybe he'll be able to sign at 32 or 33, but is anybody really going to give him 10 plus million in guaranteed money? I mean, it's not unfathomable, but it definitely doesn't seem likely at all, right? So, right. So this is that scenario that you just talked about. You know, this is not only that he deserves the money, but this is the fact that this is his chance. This is his one chance. You know, this isn't Tyrann Mathieu who got 40 guaranteed and ended up walking away with, you know, over 20 in guaranteed money, went and signed a 1 year, $7 million guaranteed deal. And if he plays well this year, guess what? Tyrann Mathieu's going to get 20 plus million in guaranteed money again. Guess what? Patrick Peterson's going to get in a year or two. He's going to get 20 plus million guaranteed in money again. You know, so again, it comes down to he's not only doing this because it's what he's worth, as you said, kind of resetting the running back market, but it's literally the best opportunity he's going to have to cash in the NFL. And he needs to take it, not just for him, but, you know, for his family and his future.
Now here's where we need to talk is how much is he worth? You've got right now, we're going to exclude Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell is on the franchise two tag, which pays him an exorbitant amount, but he's going to make more than $14 million this year. But then the of the long-term contracts that are out there, Devontae Freeman's the top at $8.25 million per year. So what's it going to take to pay David Johnson? Obviously, you have to pay him like the top running back in the NFL, but he's more than the top running back in the NFL. Because he's also basically the Cardinals' number two receiver. And I think this is where we're going to have to start looking at is this is the Tyrann Mathieu situation. He's not only a safety, they had to pay him not only top safety money, but they had to creep near cornerback, or at least slot cornerback money. I think we're going to have to do the same thing with David Johnson. So if it's me, I think you start at $10 million a year. I start at 440 and hope you don't have to go too much higher, but it might go to 450, 448. I wouldn't personally do a fifth year unless there's an easy out depending on the signing bonus, because obviously you have him through age 31, then okay, you could get production. Now, the only side to that where I say okay, where you can, if you think about year five, is if you're confident that Well, what if his running back is his rushing production drops, but he still has that ability to play receiver? I threw it out there a year ago. Well, that's kind of the thing we can also do. He wins at receiver routes. So you could probably age 31, 32, if his production dips at running back, he's got the build and the size that he could be a solid receiver.
Yeah, and it, again, it comes down to what are you going to offer him? So like you said, if you're able to get, let's just use your framework and say, let's say 4 years and $46 million, kind of split the difference, so an $11.5 million a year deal, but you're going to guarantee him north of 25, say even you're going to go high, you're going to say, look, we're going to pay you $15 million in 2019 and $15 million in 2020. And so you're going to get $30 million in guaranteed money, and then everybody's going to have kind of an out the next 2 years. You know, then the next year you drop that way down into the 8 range, and then the last year you're in that eight and a half range again. And for everybody, that kind of works out. That's kind of how the initial Larry Fitzgerald deal was structured, where, you know, it kind of crept down as it went. And so when you look at things like that, that's something that works, you know, probably for everybody. So it just comes down to what are the numbers. And you know, you and I are guesstimating. And like I said, I think when it comes to DJ, he's probably looking for 25 plus million in guaranteed money. I mean, that would be my guess. So all the fake numbers we want to throw out there, you know, 5 years, 70 million, like none of that matters, right? Because what he's actually looking for is how much in actual real guaranteed money, not Tyrann Mathieu guaranteed money, not, you know, Patrick Peterson guaranteed money, but actual good old American dollar guaranteed money. Like, what are you guaranteeing me? And like I said, I think he's probably looking at 25 plus, and that's the sticking point, is that the Cardinals are saying, look, we're going to give you 20 million guaranteed. And he's saying, no, I want 25 plus. And you know, that's what makes this hard.
And for me though, this is a no brainer for the Cardinals, because if anything else, what do you know about the next few years? After this year, you've got Josh Rosen for 3 more years on the cheap and a 4th year on a relatively cheap deal. So you can afford to pay your best players as much as they need to be paid. So to me, this is a no-brainer. You pay them what he needs to. That and set the running back market before someone else sets it for you. Once Le'Veon Bell signs that contract, if he signs a long-term deal, you're going to have to pay David Johnson that amount, because he and Le'Veon Bell are essential equals in terms of production and what they do offensively. So once Le'Veon Bell signs a deal, you got to pay David Johnson that amount. And if you push it, and you know, if you franchise him for a year, and then you wait till Todd Gurley and Ezekiel Elliott start getting their deals, then you're in trouble. I mean, you could always do the Steelers route where you franchise. But if you're going to ultimately be paying him over 2 years, $25 million in guaranteed money, why not do yourself the favor, pay him that amount in guaranteed money on a long-term contract and keep everyone happy?
Right, and find a way, like you said, keep everybody happy, keep everybody on the same page, and you know, the biggest thing is that, and this will be something we get into as we get closer to the season, but it really is a necessity that he's available for Sam Bradford or Josh Rosen, you know, or both, whatever ends up happening, and. That needs to be something that the Cardinals really think about strongly, because this isn't just about David Johnson. This is about, you know, a quarterback that has been injured most of his career. And this is about a rookie quarterback who could be without his best weapon you know, if things don't get done. Because that's what people got to remember is this isn't just replacing, you know, David, a running back. This is replacing a guy that does so much. And we saw how bad the Cardinals offense was last year without David Johnson. Now, you know, now you're going to get that with, you know, no David Johnson and a, you know, a fragile Sam Bradford or a rookie, you know, Josh Rosen. That's probably not ideal.
Right. And so let's wrap that up. And obviously that needs to happen. I don't think this is going to drag on terribly long. I still believe that the first week of training camp, this deal will be done. It'll be interesting to see if he holds out the start camp, or if this was just a statement he did during mini camp. Obviously that gives him about 10 days, gives him about a week and a half from the start of camp that he can miss and not really put himself in a bind in terms of his league status. But ultimately, the league status won't matter if he gets the long-term deal anyway. So we'll see how that works out. But coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we're going to talk about our biggest off-season takeaways, the between mini camp and OTAs. What were our biggest takeaways? That's coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'd like to remind you guys of our friends over at Harrys.com. Father's Day just passed. Hopefully you treated your dads to something special, or this your family treated you to something special. If they didn't treat you to Harry's, you can go ahead and give that self a try. It's not too late. I'm sure Dad would still appreciate this as well. I've been talking to you guys about Harry's for months now. I love their blades. I love their shaving gel. It is, for me, the experience has been great because it's so much better than the cheap disposable blades. And the quality matches that of the expensive blades, but at a fraction of the cost. Gives me a great shave. My wife likes it. And I have my next set of blades already on the way. You get them for only about $2 per blade compared to $4 or more. They're high quality blades. Harry's founders were fed up with overpaying for expensive razors and the unnecessary features. So they knew that a great shave comes out of great blades. So they made sharp, durable steel that lasts. And they bought a factory that they've been making blades for over 95 years. So we got a trial guarantee. So they stand behind the quality of their blades because we know that they know that switching razors isn't always easy. So there's a trial offer. Get yours at harrys.com/cgrade. It's a $13 value trial set that comes with everything you need. Comes with the ergonomic handle, comes with a 5-blade razor, lubricating strip, trimmer blade, all that. Comes with a fantastic shave gel. Rich leather and shave gel. And it also comes with travel cover. $13 value. You try it out. No cost to you. And if the quality guarantee, if you don't love your shave, let Harry's know. And they'll give you a full refund if you've got your first set of blades after that. So listeners of this podcast can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/cred. So make sure you go there. It's harrys.com/cred. Redeem the offer and let them know that I sent you to help support the show. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast. Off-season takeaways. Seth and I both have three big takeaways that we want to talk about so far. The storylines that have come across from the off-season between the first mandatory minicamp, rookie camp, OTAs, and then minicamp, mandatory minicamp that just finished up this last week. Seth, what was your number one? What was one of your big off-season program takeaways?
I think the first one is that you've heard a lot of good positive things about Robert Khamdicha, and when you look at Steve Keim and you know, take out anything about this new regime, but you just look at Steve Keim in a vacuum and what he's done. It's been really kind of a roller coaster ride. And he's had some really good things. He's had some really bad things in terms of draft, free agent signings, extensions, all of that stuff. And I'm not going to, you know, get on him for DJ Humphreys. You can't really predict the injuries he's had to deal with, but you've got to be concerned about that 2016 draft with Robert Kimdiche and Brandon Williams. So to hear that things are going well, that Kimdiche is flashing, that he is thriving in this role that you and I talked about when he was drafted, that this was the role that's kind of meant for him, this one technique, this one gap, three technique kind of penetrating guy, the Kawan Short of this Arizona Cardinals defense. That's huge, because when you look at the defensive line, the only really known commodity is Chandler Jones. Obviously, Corey Peters is a nice player, but he's on the wrong side of 30 with two bad Achilles and now being asked to play kind of a pseudo new position. A position he hasn't played since he was with Atlanta. Then you've got, you know, Marcus Golden. Is he going to be healthy? If not, is it going to be Benson Mawaya? So you need a guy that really steps up. You need somebody like Kimdiche to take that next step. And so to hear that he's thriving and playing so well in that position, I think is really important.
For me, my first takeaway just is the narrative that it has been the quarterback position. Really, I mean, going from the situation and the Cardinals with the offseason, I think the narrative has been, it's been very positive across the board, but you have to like where they're at quarterback. Yes, it raises some questions just about with how much time off that Sam Bradford had, that they had this plan. And they talked about it. If you listen to the interviews, you listen to the press conferences, they have a plan. They have a plan for Sam Bradford, much like the Cardinals had for Carson Palmer last year. Ultimately, it didn't matter. So Carson Palmer saved his arm for the season, and then they broke his arm. So that ended up not doing so well. But they've been limiting that he's doing. They're getting the knee healthy. They're trying to not grind him into the ground too early. Nonetheless, that locker room is firmly behind Sam Bradford. Everything's positive. That and Josh Rosen, everything's positive about him. Very smart. He is not overwhelmed with the situation. And there's talk of a quarterback competition, and that's fun. That's fun. The National, that's kind of a narrative as well. I look at this quarterback competition the way that we looked at the Drew Stanton, Blaine Gabbert competition last year. Yes, there is, quote unquote, a competition. And Josh Rosen is competing to be the starter. But it is going to take something extraordinary for Rosen to surpass Bradford. Bradford is no slouch at quarterback. And everything, now, the one thing that worries me is the limited looks he's had. But he'll get those, and he's a smart quarterback. He's seen a lot of things in the NFL, so there's not going to be much of it in terms of surprise for him. And so that's my one takeaway, is that everything from the quarterback room has been completely positive, completely.
And that's a good thing, because, you know, I don't know what you're following with other teams and things of that nature right now, but you've seen up and down of Buffalo. You've seen some concerns out of Kansas City, or just maybe concerns is definitely the wrong word, but, you know, just some, oh, well, you know, Patrick Mahomes had some struggles. You look at the biggest one, and that kind of made the rounds today, the Cleveland Browns, and, you know, the statement of Baker Mayfield's not really close to Tyrod Taylor right now. And maybe that's the same with Josh Rosen and Sam Bradford, just the fact that, you know, like you said, Bradford's been on a pitch count already, and so that's given Sam or Rosen plenty of reps and work, and that's a little bit different as opposed to two guys just kind of being out there every day throwing against each other, so to speak. So it's good that it's good that kind of everything's quiet. And the best part is we're not having any discussion about Mike Glennon. So good luck. Good luck, Mike. Keep cashing those paychecks, but I don't want to have to talk about it this year.
What's your number two takeaway?
My number two takeaway is just how young, I don't want to say bad because it's not fair, but young this running back room is when you take out David Johnson. I mean, and we all know David Johnson will be here for game one, but it makes you wonder, it makes you think, my God, what would happen if David Johnson went down again? Are you calling Adrian Peterson right away again? Like, hey, you're still not signed. Come play with us. You know, who is the guy behind him? Obviously, they have high hopes for Chase Edmonds, but I think it would be unfair to expect a fourth-round rookie to kind of take over as the guy. Obviously, they have some expectations for TJ Logan, but in the same way, he's basically a fifth-round rookie. I mean, I know he got some training camp and one preseason game last year, but, man, that running back room and I'm not expecting to see, you know, Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, you know, like that's not what anybody's expecting, but it sure is a thin group. Once you get past David Johnson in terms of ability and experience.
My number two takeaway is about the defense, because obviously they're making a big defensive switch. Say what you want of the difference between 3-4 or 4-3. Once again, the narrative has been very controlled in the fact that the Cardinals are apparently playing a much simpler defense. They're asking their players to think less and react more. Patrick Peterson has been about it. Apparently Robert Kimdichie is doing great. Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden, they're only going to be asked to rush the passer, it seems like. They're no more dropping into coverage. The defensive tackles, they're going to hit a gap and run downhill. They're going to expect the linebackers to make plays, and they're going to expect – so I know that Todd Bowles and James Betcher ran complex defenses, and that was by design. It was – generating pressure a number of ways to confuse opposing offenses, and it was effective. But I'm one of the big takeaways is apparently now with this new system, simpler is better. We'll see if simpler is better, but it's going to be interesting to see if Patrick Peterson just said this last week, you know, that we should have fewer mental mistakes. There should be fewer mistakes because you basically got one gap that you're assigned, you play and you go. Will that be more effective? I guess if they win their one-on-one battles, it will be. Because they won't be tricking anyone. It doesn't sound like they're going to be tricking anybody, any opposing offenses. They're just going to be beating them. That's the plan.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a big thing, and like you said, it seems like everybody's excited, and sometimes change is good, but and maybe one of the things you and I maybe we haven't talked about this enough is the fact that it's not like the Cardinals made a change, right? A decision was made for them to go a different route, to have a new staff and a new coach, and so the fact that the guys are buying in and seem excited, I think that's a positive, because it, you know, you're going from the most successful 5-year run in franchise history to a first-time head coach. It'd be really easy to hear some murmurs, right? It'd be really easy to hear some maybe guys aren't all the way bought in. So that's a good thing to hear. My final thing in kind of that third thing in the maybe the biggest question coming out of this is, what the heck are they doing at wide receiver? I mean, let's take Larry Fitzgerald out of this conversation. What the heck is going on at wide receiver? I mean, is Greg Little a camp body, or were they really that concerned with the veteran or lack of veteran presence in that room. And then if so, is Greg Little really the answer to that? Obviously you've got Bryce Butler, who, you know, they've been writing glowing reviews about him on Arizona Sports and the AZ Cardinals website. And then you add in obviously rookie Christian Kirk, last year's third round pick Chad Williams. There's a lot of intrigue in that room, but is there anybody that you can count on after Larry Fitzgerald? And that's just going to be a phenomenal kind of position to watch, because you don't know what you're going to get out of it right now. And it's going to be, you know, it's going to come down to how this all kind of plays out. Who is the true number two receiver? Where does Christian Kirk line up, you know, in the same vein, where does Larry Fitzgerald line up? Like, all of that is just, it just is, it's so exciting to kind of look at and get to understand.
And for me, my final takeaway, my biggest third takeaway, is the positions where they haven't added anyone yet. Yeah, I know there's been talk about Trace Boston at safety, but as of right now, you have basically nothing at tight end that you can count on after Jermaine Gresham, who has come in off of a torn Achilles. So you've got Ricky Seals-Jones and Gabe Holmes. Okay. There's potential, but can you count on any of them? You've got at linebacker, you've got your three starters, and then what? You've got Josh Bynum, you've got Hassan Reddick, Daniel Buchanan. After that, you've got a bunch of undrafted rookies and a special teams guy. And then at safety, you've got two starters, and now you know that they need a third safety, because Buda Baker is going to be playing in the slot, which means you need another safety, whether that's Bene Bedwickery, who's getting safety reps now. It's interesting that there's certain positions that they seem fine at, where you think, wait, are they really fine? The addition of Jamar Taylor at cornerback really kind of settles things down, because he is an established starter in the league. Whether he's good or not is a different story, but he can at least start, and you're not going to have to worry about terrible play. It's not like, oh my gosh, Brandon Williams out there his rookie year, his first couple of games. So that really settles the cornerback position. At safety, you're like, okay, it's just Ben Wickery. Is it Rudy Ford? Is it one of these undrafted rookies? And I think ultimately they're going to sign someone, but the other takeaway is just they seem really content at certain positions that have a lot of question marks, especially at depth.
Yeah. And they don't, you know, it's not even question marks. It's just, it goes back to something that, you know, I've kind of talked about a couple times, and that's they didn't have the ability to answer all the needs in one year. And while that's easy to kind of say, the way they've gone about it was a bit more, it's kind of perplexing in terms of positional value and importance. And I always go back to this, and there's a 100% chance I'm wrong, so, you know, take that as it is. But I always go back to this idea that I think Steve Wilks and Al Holcomb really believe in themselves on defense. And it's kind of like the Bruce Arians on offense thing. Like, when you believe in yourself, you don't necessarily need to stock those positions. And so that's where I believe that this is kind of coming from. You know, we'll see what happens. I'm interested to see how this all works out and to see where they go from here. Cause like you said, there's some kind of glaring needs, right? At certain positions right now. And so it'd be great to see these guys, or, you know, see them fill out the roster and feel slightly more comfortable with what they have right now, than what what they have just that is on the roster as of this moment.
And with that, we're going to, coming up on the final segment of the Rise of C-Rip podcast, we're going to talk about the contracts, basically. We're going to talk about the, other than David Johnson, who are some guys that the Cardinals probably should get under contract long term? How much for how much? And then who are the players that we might want to see the Cardinals target as additional as the kind time types? That's coming next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast. And David Johnson obviously is number one, numero uno, when it comes to contract extensions, even though in terms of the Cardinals, he wasn't, because Andy Lee got a 2-year contract extension. I get why they did it. It just seems weird that they did that, that they got his deal done before Johnson. And I wrote an article today. They have four players. They have three other players other than David Johnson who they might want to consider extending before they get to the offseason. Number one, Marcus Golden. Number two, Dalen Buchanan. Number three, Rodney Gunter on a much lower scale. What do you think? Marcus Golden, do they need to take care of that before the season, or should they play it out and wait till the off season?
You know, that's going to be an interesting one, because who does it benefit more to get a contract done? In my mind, it's the Cardinals. It benefits the Cardinals to get something done now and not have to risk him having another 12 plus sack season, right? Because a guy, even coming off a knee injury, a guy with two 12 sack seasons in the NFL, especially in two different defensive schemes, all of a sudden you're like, oh, you can't drop the, well, you know, look at the scheme he plays in. Now all of a sudden it's in two different schemes. You're going to be talking, what, 13, 14 million a year, probably
at least. So
if you can get him now for, you know, that like 8 to 9 to 10 range, and you take that kind of, and I don't want to put him in the same category because he's had that one really good year, but, you know, take that kind of Justin Bethel leap with him and say, okay, we're going to give you 9 million, you know, 5 years, 45 million. I think you do that because, you know, then all of a sudden, if he is a double digit sack guy, you know, if say they give him a 5-year extension, if he is a double digit sack guy over the next, you know, in four of the next six seasons, well, you got your money worth.
Yes,
you got your money big time. So you know, that's the thing. I think it behooves the Cardinals more than it does Marcus Golden at this point to get something done.
And probably is the case where Golden probably is going to want to play out this year before he does it, because if he does do it, he could get that major pass rush. And here's the thing, now he's playing defensive end. If they want a franchise tag, it's going to cost more than it was going to cost Chandler Jones because of the possession designation. Now, what about Dalen Buchanan? Because we just saw the Houston Texans sign Bernardrick McKinney to a 5-year, $50 million extension. That, to me, kind of sets the marker for Buchanan. And if you look at how they have their roster, if they just go, okay, we're going to play this out, they don't have anybody behind him. They kind of need him to be a guy that they re-sign. But what's it going to cost? If it costs $10 million a year, okay. That's kind of what you pay a top-end linebacker, which he can be.
Yeah, and it's one of those situations where if the linebackers of this defense, you might be able to kind of play it out. But the fact that the linebacker is such an important piece of this defense, and then you add on the fact that, like you said, they don't really have anybody or anyone behind him. So you can't really wait, so to speak. And so, yeah, I'm kind of with you. I think they need to sign him. That McKinney contract killed them, because I don't think either is worth $10 million a year. But you got to pay what the going rate is. And from a statistical standpoint, you know, not a PFF grade or anything like that, but an actual statistical standpoint,
DeYoung can do a little bit more. I mean, he's smaller, but he can do a little bit more than McKinney can.
And he's had a better career.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's been a more valuable player. So it's, you know, that's a tough one because I that's a lot of yak to pay a guy that I think is not as good as he should be. Obviously, I think he's going to be able to have a better chance of producing now that he's in a 43 and he's going to play that weak side position that's going to keep him a little cleaner. But you know, this is I just that's a lot of money, $10 million a year. I mean, you're talking about when we talked about it earlier, that's $10 million, and we're talking about David Johnson at $9 million. Like, I get positional value, but you're really going to tell me that Deion Buchanan's worth more than David Johnson?
Well, the reason why for me, it's also a thing that you got to take care of because it's not like you have a lot of financial. You don't have a lot of cap space allocated to the position. Because right now you've got Deion, okay, at the 8.9. But you've got Josh Bynes on a 3-year, $10 million deal, and you've got Hassan Reddick, who you've got under control for another 4 years. 3 years on the cheap, fourth year on the not quite so cheap, but not crazy expensive. So you can afford to
splurge.
In a way, over. You can splurge on Buchanan because you've got your other positions taken care of. And you can always, like, if you're looking for a guy to replace Josh Bynes, you could then go young and draft a guy to replace him in the middle. And that way you've got your financials. You're not unbalanced defensively at that position, which is not a position you want to pay too much to in terms of value. Since, as we know, linebackers, any decent linebacker can produce big numbers.
Right. And that's the thing is, you mentioned something I think that was really smart. When you look at the positional spending as a whole, if you pay him $10 million a year and then you add in Josh Bynes, we'll just call it 3.5 for easy math, and then Hassan Reddick on a rookie deal, right? Like that entire amount is probably less than $17 million. So you're talking three players. You're not talking one or two. And so if you're able to have your whole core under, you know, let's just call it 20, that's really good. And then you add in the fact, like you said, you've got Reddick under control for another, you know, 3 years at cheap. You could probably get all of Deion Buchanan's money off the books in terms of guarantees in those first 3 years before you have to make a decision on Reddick, or like you said, kind of bite that fifth year option bullet and pay him, you know, probably that it'll probably be at around $9.5 million.
And then the last player to look at, and this is a much lower, this Rodney Gunter, he's entering year four. I mentioned him. He isn't a critical guy. I'm not saying he needs to be extended before the season, but considering what you've got, Corey Peters there, he's getting older. I mean, he's still got what, two more years on his deal? Because he extended the 3 years, I think it was. Kim Dichi, but Gunter has been, I mean, he showed flashes, so we'll see how good he is this year. Olsen Pierre, you've got under control. You still have him as an exclusive rights free agent for another year. Gunter, if he performs pretty well, he's a guy I'd want to extend during the year for, I mean, obviously you might have to Justin Bethel him in a way, but you pay him a little more in potential because he could become a starter, or maybe just you walk away from, but he's the type of player that you kind of want to see take over a starting position. It almost like he just hasn't had the chance yet.
Yeah, and he maybe he'll benefit from a switch back to a 4-3, and you look at him and he can take that star role and, you know, kind of become the guy in that vein, because we've been kind of waiting for him to have the same impact and success he had as a rookie, and it just hasn't happened yet. So now you sit here and you wait and you say, okay, where does he fit into the future plans? You know, Peters has what, 2 years left on a deal that he just kind of re-upped on. So if you're able to get Gunter for like a 3-year deal for cheap, and people might be saying 3 years, why would you want that? Well, that gives you a year after Peters if Peters plays out both years, and it gives you 2 years after Peters if you cut him after 1 year. And in the same way that we talked about Marcus Golden, you kind of get him before he has a chance to break out, you know, so you get him at a 3-year kind of $6-8 million deal, and it seems really cheap, and it is really cheap, but it also helps everybody out in the long run and makes the team stronger if he turns out. Obviously, the turning out part would be the key.
Right. And you look at the rest of the – you kind of look at the rest of the roster. Brandon Williams, we don't need to talk about, because he still has to prove he can make the team. AQ Shipley, he's entering the last year of his deal, but they've already drafted his replacement. Well, they've drafted two replacements, honestly.
I was going to say they've
– Mason Cole.
This isn't the first replacement of his.
and Mike Iupati, they cut his contract down, so obviously they're not good. So that's kind of like the only players we need to worry about in that sense. What about the market still out there? Obviously, number one, I think everybody is just waiting for Trey Boston to sign, and I'm in that group. Antoine Bethea was not an every down player last year. He was a starter, but he was not an every down player. He played on nickel. He didn't play in base, and I think that's what we need to see again this year. Sign Trey Boston, have him and Buddha be the guys on the field every play, and bring in Antoine Bethea on, you know, 60% of the plays, 70% of the plays to play. Is there another safety on the market that you'd consider taking? Because Boston is a perfect match because he's already got familiarity of the defensive sets. He has high-end potential, and he still needs to prove it because he's in that laggy safety market.
Right, and that's the tough thing right now is – where do you go and who do you go get? And I don't know if there's a guy. I don't know if there's anybody that you go out there to kind of overpay for. I like Kenny Vaccaro, but he's coming off of surgery. Eric Reed, that's just a whole nother ball of wax. Like you said, everybody's kind of waiting on the Trey Boston thing, but is that going to be something that they do late? Is that something that they're going to do depending on what Steve Wilks wants to do? Because I mean, they crossed paths when he was in Carolina, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you would assume if this was a priority for Wilks, it would have been done by now, wouldn't you?
Yes and no. In terms of price, I think this is where I think he wants him. And Keim wants him, but at a 1-year deal. I don't think he wants to sign him for more than 1 year.
And so, you know, well, and then it comes back to another thing in that you really hope that that doesn't come back to bite them if it becomes a greater need than what it is right now. And that's something that we talked about earlier. It definitely could be a need. It definitely could be something that you're like, whew. Really, really would have liked to have a guy like, you know, Trey Boston on the roster right now for what they're missing. So, you know, when it's all said and done, I think Keim's done enough throughout his tenure to show that he understands how to build a team in terms of late signings and where value can be found. So I wouldn't be shocked if it happens and it works out in the best way possible. It just may not be in the time frame that we're used to or hoping for.
Now with these other positions like a tight end or a linebacker,
I just don't know. Where
where do you go? I mean, a tight end, I think you're okay. I think they're okay. I mean, they've already, I don't know. I don't know if they're okay. It depends on how much they're asked to do other than block. Cause they've got a couple guys on the roster that are, what is it? Bo Sandlin and Bryce Williams. Have you ever heard of them? No, but they played in Carolina before. I'm assuming they can block. I think that's kind of their thing. I think they're banking on Ricky Seals-Jones to break out, and we're going to see what happens with that. But a linebacker, I mean, really a tight end and a linebacker, there's kind of nothing left on the market. So, I mean, unless Carlos Dansby, we bring him back again.
Has anybody signed Antonio Gates yet? Like, I don't even know. That's what I'm asking.
No, and that's considering that the Los Angeles Chargers have a great knee since they just lost Hunter Henry.
Right. And so, again, it comes down to, like, let's look at this. One, do the Cardinals have a need? Yes. But is there a guy that just leaps off the page of, like, hey, we got to sign this guy?
Nope. Unfortunately, probably where they're at is where they're at. We might see, obviously, the Boston signing. Any other position? I mean, obviously, when we get towards the end of training camp and you start having those cuts, that's an area you could start looking at guys to add. But do you see anything else? Like, do you envision any other position being added? Maybe a cornerback? I don't think at this point you really need a cornerback, since you only need two cornerbacks on the field now that we know that Buda Baker's going to play in the slot.
Yeah, I don't think so right now. I mean, I think right now they're in a good position there. you like where they're at in terms of, in terms of defensive line options. The question marks, like you said, I think are kind of up the middle, you know, linebacker and safety. Who emerges from that? From that grouping, and what do they look like in terms of playing time, and how do they fit into what the Cardinals want to do? You know, is there going to be a DJ Swearinger type signing? Is there going to be a fit like that somewhere? That'll be kind of what's interesting to watch, and how that all unfolds.
And that's what we have to watch for the next few weeks until training camp starts, a little bit more than a month. Until then, we'll see. I think we'll probably do our division ranking. It'll be kind of less Cardinals and more division. We'll probably talk off-season stuff, like ranking the teams at each position next week, and then maybe one more. But it might not. We might have one more show before our training camp preview. And with that, we will end this episode of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. You know where to find us. You can find us featured on revengeofthebirds.com and also on cardswire.com. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. You can find us on iTunes, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, on Spreaker, on Blog Talk Radio, on Audioboom. So basically, you know how to find us. If you're already listening, you know how to do it. Spread the word. We love to get more listeners. But on behalf of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll talk to you in another couple of weeks. Go Cardinals. The Cardinals say, rise up, Red Sea. We turn around and say, rise up and see red.